Good morning, everyone. I was about to say good afternoon because I normally do this in the afternoon. Happy Friday. It's the new year. This is the first tea of the new year. Last year was pretty busy. We had, I think, 12 or 13 episodes. But we're starting off the new year with an interesting concept that's going to be opening this year.
Yes.
The concept is called Capone's Drinkery and Eats. It's a 1920s themed restaurant and bar.
Mm-hmm.
Italian restaurant.
Yes.
Not pizza, from what I've understood.
No pizza.
So we're going to talk about that a little bit and some other things. But our guest today is Connie Swallow. And she is a franchise owner of the Lafayette Brick and Spoon. And she's going to be also, she's owner of Capone's Drinkery and Eats. So, Connie, thank you for joining
you.
Us. So tell us a little bit about you and how you got started in business in general.
Since I was 17, which was just like 3 years ago,
right?
I've been involved in the, I got started in the gaming industry, actually, poker gaming industry. Kept doing that for so long, which again led to restaurants and bars, because at the time we had to start up, you had to have a full service restaurant for each truck stop that would have these. So that got me into the restaurant business. And over the years worked for different, places like Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, done that, opened up restaurants from ground up in different travel centers, which led me to the hospitality industry in general, hotels, bigger casinos, more restaurants. And then eventually I moved to Dallas, where I worked for the 7-Eleven Corporation out of Richmond. And I was a franchise specialist for them whenever they decided to start franchising, because they were, they were bought out by the Japanese a few years back.
Okay.
And they decided to start franchising. They were all corporate owned forever. So
so as a franchise specialist, like what was your job role? Like, what did you have to do?
Well, we had to actually pick these stores that they wanted to put up for sale. We'd go and we'd analyze, the sales and everything, identify where the loss is and correct that issue, bring those stores back up to par to where they're actually making money, because of course franchise fees, determined how much revenue those stores were making. So we'd go in, we bring it up, we construction, whatever, reset everything, train the employees, and then whenever they would pick a franchisee, then we'd work with the franchisee for a couple of months, getting them ready to turn the store over to them. Then we'd stay with them another 2 weeks, hand in hand, running the store, showing how to run it efficiently.
Okay. Well, yeah. kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So
and then that led me back here, and hotels, still restaurants,
So are you part of any hotels, or is the restaurant thing...
It's just the restaurant thing now. Yeah.
Okay.
My last hotel that I was a consultant for this guy who owned a hotel in New Orleans, a travel center in Doosan, an RV park in Doosan, along with a video poker casino. And as soon as my contract was done there, I was like, well, I'm going to work for myself now. So I bought Brick and Spoon because I was involved with that. Love the concept. It's the original store. It was the only corporate owned store left because all the other ones are franchised. And the franchisor just came to me and he's like, I either have to sell it or close it. He's like, I just don't have the time to give it the attention it needs. I was like, I'll buy it, I didn't want to see it close, So I've been doing well there. Sales for my first year were just far exceeded what I thought was going to, But I mean, I put certain things into place because, that's what I do too. I consult for different restaurants. If they're kind of failing, I'm part of the whole John Taffer group. With the whole bar rescue thing.
I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, well, Bar Rescue, John Taffer goes in and turns these bars around and,
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with Restaurant Impossible.
Uh-huh.
With,
yeah, this is kind of like one, geared to bars.
Okay.
But I put a lot of the things that he teaches us in place
at
Brick and Spoon, and it's worked tremendously. So, and then how Capone's came out, I love the restaurant industry in general. My daughters and I went on vacation in New York a few years ago. And they were, exhausted from the trip. And I was like, I'm just going to go look for a little place to kind of chill and, maybe have a drink or so. And I was, found this one place. I was like, okay, well, directions to it. And I ended up like at an alley and I'm just kind of looking around. I was like, So someone comes, like, are you lost? I'm like, yeah, I'm looking at, you know, this, I think it was called the Blind Pig or something like that. He's like, oh yeah, you go down this this alley here and the second stairway, like that deep dark alley right here. And he's like, yeah, he's like, second stairway, go down the steps and just knock on the door. I'm like, where are you sending me? You know?
Oh my goodness.
I was like, all right, it's do or die. I'm like, it's a place. I said, I where? He's like, oh, it's under the grocery store. He's like, just go knock on the door. They'll let you in. I'm like, okay. But this place was underneath a grocery store because, of course, they have basements and, you know.
Yeah, you can't have basements here.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I went and guy opened the door. They didn't necessarily ask for a password, but, you know, it was just, you know, it's hidden in an alley under a grocery store. And it was just the coolest little spot, you know, and I was like, whoa.
And there's no windows,
no,
right?
No.
I mean, that's so, I mean, I guess in the
no
prohibition.
Windows, no clocks.
No clocks?
No clocks.
Well, kind of like a casino.
The casino. Yeah.
Were they pumping in oxygen as well?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you have your 2-hour seating, your 8-hour seating, your 1-hour seating, you know.
Wow.
All that goes into play.
Like, so that was Prohibition era's type of thing, right?
Yes. Well, during the Prohibition era, of course, when they decided to outlaw drinking, a lot of these places, you know, were like, no. And of course, mobster related, they were still pumping it, bootlegging and all this. So they still managed to have these places. I mean, you can tell people you can't do this. They're going to find a way to do it, you know, if they really want to do it. Some were designated as they paint the door green, you know, and then you would know that that's a place to get booze. But of course, you know, police and all that started, you know, catching on to that. So in that time, they actually served everything in coffee cups. So in the event of a raid, it just looked like you were drinking coffee and not booze.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, that went on for several years until 1933, when the 21st Amendment came into play and, you know, it was allowed again. But they still kept these speakeasies, and how, you know, Capone, you know, had something to do with it. He supplied a lot of the liquor, getting them in and out to over 20,000 speakeasies in the Chicago area. So that's, you know, I loved history. I loved anything with Al Capone and mobsters. I'm like, oh, it's all tied in. I'm like, this would be so cool to bring here, you know. So the, you know, over there, they didn't really do too much. They just called it a speakeasy because it was hidden. It was just like a little hidden gem. But I was like, I'm gonna take it a little further. I was like, Lafayette has nothing like this, you know. Bring it here. Let's have our once a month. We're gonna have a Prohibition night where, you know, it's, you know, you buy a ticket to get in. You're issued the password. You come that night, you know, it's just different things. We're going to have jazz. We're going to have, you know, live music. We, you know, I found it's the, what I've gotten from this. I mean, so many people are pouring in that, you know, just are all about this. You know, I have this one lady here in town. She sings at a speakeasy. I want to say in Houston, but she sings like Nina Simone and Billie Holiday. And, you know, I didn't even know like this existed here, you know.
Right.
I was like, that is awesome. That's amazing. But the turnout has just been phenomenal. Just the feedback from everyone. Everybody wants to work there. You know, guys like, let me be the bouncer at the door. You know, just, I have these classic cars I can bring. I was like, you know. So we have a lot planned based around that theme. And there, I mean, I really didn't really want to do too much of a restaurant. I wanted to do maybe small plates and shareables, which I'm still kind of finagling the menu. Which the menu, it is authentic Italian. And they're like, Connie, you're not Italian. But in my last divorce, I was awarded my ex-mother-in-law. She's from Sicily.
Okay.
So she has it's like a handwritten book, you know, just from her mom's recipes, her grandmother's recipes. And I cooked right alongside of her for like almost 15 years. And, you know, she gave it to me, but her daughters didn't care to, you know, continue it. And I was like, I always cook it at home, you know. And my kids are like, oh my God, it's just so good. I'm like, okay. So I was like, well, you know, why don't I just make it Italian, you know, with Al Capone and, you know, researching the Italian menus, how it's laid out, how they eat it. You know, they don't eat spaghetti and meatballs together. It's separate, you know.
What?
Like, they'll order the pasta first, then they order the meat, and, you know, it's very interesting.
Wow.
So not many places do that, but
let me tell you, whenever my family makes spaghetti, this is how I always make spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's not meatballs. We don't make the meatballs.
Yeah.
We take the meat, you know, grind it up, and we cook the noodles, and it's all together, mm-hmm. and you serve it like that. And
oh, and they don't call it sauce either. It's called gravy.
It's called gravy?
Yeah, because she was like, it's not a sauce. Kind of like, this is a sauce. This is a sauce, Nani. Come on now. You know? And she's like, it's gravy. I'm like, this is not, you live here. You know this isn't gravy. This is what we call sauce. And she would just get so upset.
That's cool, though.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but just the thought of eating or do they eat the pasta and the meatballs separately? Mm-hmm. Like they
and it's ordered separately too. Yeah.
Okay. That's yeah. so
it
odd.
Is. It is.
At least for me, because yeah. I'm not the most cultured person.
Sometimes if you see these old movies, they're just eating a plate of spaghetti. There's no meat on there because they don't eat them together for some reason.
Like how do you that's eat just plain like dry noodles? Then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it has sauce with gravy on it, but they just.
Okay, so the actual meatball itself is separate.
It's separate. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But there's
not served together.
Sauce or gravy.
Yeah.
On the plate. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. God.
Yeah. But we're okay. trying to keep it, like right now, we're kind of in the middle of still deciding the actual location, which, you know, that's a long story. But I've been, you know, just going around just the different things that I'm going to put in there, just antiques, of course. Like, we are going to have a shoeshine stand. I've got a hold to, like, this vintage shoeshine stand because, you know, I mean, that's what they did back then, shine the shoes. I actually have a 1922 Thomas Edison phonograph.
Okay.
That actually still works. And, of course, it doesn't run by electricity. It's the big crank. And I have, like, 11, they call them discs. You know, I said records.
Yeah, right.
I'm getting records for this. And, like, the discs are, like, okay. And I played it for my kids, and like, oh, Mom, that's just creepy. That just sounds like something should be in a
horror. It had like the staticky, the popping. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool. So I'm in the process of restoring that right now, just kind of strengthening up the wheels at the bottom because it's very old. I've got these old 19th century cash registers. I've got two of them.
But they're not going to be used as the point of sale system.
No, not at all. Because like some of the buttons just don't even pop up anymore, which I'm trying to take it apart, blow it all out. And I've had friends from a machine shop like, hey, bring it over here. I'm like, dude, I don't want you breaking it, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's just really cool. I've got the old candlestick phones, you know? What else do I have? I have so much stuff. But as far as my glassware, I've actually got the speakeasy line of the glassware, like the old cordial glasses and, It's gonna be cool. Our drink menu actually kind of focuses on the drinks that were back then, like of course the old fashioned, the French 75, the sidecar, the bee's knees, mint julep. But I will teach my bartenders how to make them exactly like they were made then, but you gotta keep in mind they didn't have a whole lot of mixers back then. So everything is really strong. It's like alcohol on top of alcohol. So we're going to offer the original, but we're going to also offer our own spin on it. That's
okay.
Not so harsh, you know.
Right.
I also have a, how tall is it? I think a 3 or 4 foot moonshine still that I'm going to put on display there because, of course, it started bootlegging.
And I saw you asking someone on Facebook if someone knew a moonshine maker.
Moonshine.
I mean, is that legal? That can't be legal.
It's legal only if you can't, you if you're going to... If you make it from like liquor that's already made and bottled.
Okay.
You know, like for instance, I make my own limoncello, which is an Italian after dinner drink, just a little sipping thing. It's made from vodka. Like I use a good vodka to start it off, you know. But it ferments. It takes me about 90 days to make it.
90?
90, yeah.
Oh my God.
It has to sit. It goes through two phases. It sits for 45 days in just lemon rinds, not the peels, because you've got to shave off all the white. It just literally has to be the lemon part, the peel, you know. That sits for about 45 days in the dark, and then another 45 days you add so much sugar, so much water, and then it ferments again for another 45 days. By the time it's done, it starts off at 80 proof vodka, but it's probably like 100 and something after that, you know.
Oh my goodness.
But of course I add like a little more sugar, a little more what to make it tolerable, you know, to drink. And it's really good. Like I finished like my first batch and I brought it to Brick and Spoon and they just almost polished it off, you know. So now I've got like, I think 4 more gallons making. So.
So you mentioned the location.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still going to be on E. Broussard? I mean, if you can't say anything, that's...
I mean, right now we're kind of weighing out some options. We want to put it in the, you know, the best spot. You know, we are in negotiations for that and have been for a while now. I really want this to kick off. I, you know, first impressions, everything.
Yeah.
And just, we're going through some design changes there because, you know, what I wanted and what we're ending up with the layout that we have just may not work for my concept because I don't want to open this, you know, half done, you
right,
know,
right.
And you don't get the full effect from it. You know, I want the bar hidden. I want, you know, I want it to be a secret entrance. I want it to, you know, so we're kind of weighing out some options right now before we, you know, go further and just really say exactly where it's going to be. You know.
Well, and this is just kind of me thinking out loud. It's like, what about downtown's area? Like, there's a bunch of interesting old buildings there.
Well, we're going to look at one tomorrow.
Okay.
I just don't want to say yet.
Yeah, no. Hey,
I don't want to get excited and like, yes, which I think it's a done deal. But
oh, my goodness. Okay.
And, you know, with that, and I was telling my partner this morning, I'm like, you know, we'll be in the middle, like, you know, for Downtown Alive. All the festivals downtown, Mardi Gras, you know, and then of course all of my iconic dates that I'm going to do that ties it into Capone's, you know, because my thing, you know, different events. I originally wanted to be planned to open New Year's Eve, this past New Year's Eve, and do a big blowout,
yeah.
You know. Well, that didn't happen. You know, I wanted to, you know, my first date was January 19th was supposed to be, that's your last time to drink because January 19th, 1920, that was your last night to have a drink because January 20th started, you know, Prohibition.
Yeah.
So I'm missing that date. And of course the next date, besides like Capone's birthday, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, I wanted to recreate, you know, I want to get with a theater group and like recreate this little event every time, you know, Valentine's Day every time, you know, every year. Just to make it another little thing, which I know it's just shooting guys on, you know, against the wall, but you know, kind of tie some things into it.
Okay.
If you're familiar with that, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
I think I've heard of it.
Had something to do with it, and he didn't have anything to do with it. Maybe he did. You know.
Man, this is so interesting. I'm trying to see if I can look at the comments, but this app gives me issues. So if you are asking questions, I apologize. We can't see them. But we are going to be able to see the comments after we're done, and we'll address it if you do have comments and there are questions. I have a couple of questions, and a lot of them you've answered kind of already. Is, you know, like, for example, when do you plan on opening Capone's? That's kind of, you really don't know yet.
Yeah. And even right now, if I had to guess, even with this new location, we're in January, we should still be open probably by April. You know?
Okay.
Because this should go pretty quickly if we go with this other location, you know.
Like, what's the square footage that you need for this? Because that other spot on E. Broussard, that was a pretty big
spot. It was 3,400 square feet.
That's there. A lot.
I started with 2,200. And then he just had, like, this little section available in the back. And I was like, well, what are you going to do with that? He's like, oh, just storage. I was like, well, that would be perfect for our banquet room, you know, because even at the Brick, people call me all the time. Do you have a meeting room? Do you have, you know, meeting space? I'm like, no. And I mean, I turned down a lot of business because of that. I'm like, I could just push tables together, but they want something secluded.
Yeah.
Which I'm still kind of thinking of a redesign some point this year to maybe allow for that, you know, at the Brick. But with that being said, I had people like, they wanted to get married there. They wanted to have photo shoots there. They wanted to have like rehearsal dinners. Birthday dinner.
And you're talking about at Capone's.
At Capone's.
Yeah, because obviously you're getting a lot of messages because mm-hmm. I see you post on Facebook saying we're not hiring yet
that. And then our biggest thing too, because we're going to have these, what I call a pod, but it's just a little intimate, like little space with just, you know, it's kind of blocked off with some drapes and stuff. I mean, you can still see in it, but we have so many people. In fact, I didn't realize that I had the reserve button on my Facebook page and it was like they're reserving a pod for April 19th, you know?
Oh, wow.
And they're wanting to get on the list now. And I was like, I don't know the opening date, you know? I'm like,
God, you know, this is such an interesting thing because, with what I do, I cover as many of the new businesses as I can, new construction, I try to cover any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And The Advocate, I think,
they did.
Wrote an independent study, but like just a post or an article just on your restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I had mentioned.
He did come to the restaurant.
Mentioned your restaurant or the name of it.
Before that.
Much longer before that, whenever the development was just getting started, but I didn't know what you know, what was it about? Mm-hmm. And so after that article came out and then looking into it and kind of learning more about it, of course, I take maybe a very small amount of information from the Advocate, but most of it I get from your page mm-hmm. and just messaging you. Mm-hmm. And I think I wrote my own version of the post almost a month afterwards.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but it seemed that it felt like nobody had saw anything about your restaurant until I posted
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the post, last time I looked, which was several weeks ago, had like 5,000 shares.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's still in that area. But there was a lot of comments.
Like 784 comments or something. I was blown away and just going through them. I was like, wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff said. One of the big things that I think somebody addressed, and I kind of want to talk about it, is a dress code.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've been living in Lafayette for how long?
Mm-hmm. I know. A very long time.
So I've been in Lafayette only since 2010.
Uh-huh.
And
I've been here since 92, I think.
I immediately got the sense that Lafayette is a casual town.
It is. Well, and I say, and I think people are just kind of taking it. It's not really strict. We just don't want, we don't want it too casual. We don't want like t-shirts. We don't want, because, you know, it's, you know, we're going for that older clientele, you know, just, you know, very professional, you know, that sort of thing. Our, you know, and what we're offering are, I will not have Well brand liquors. It's all going to be Call, you know. But I mean, it's not a strict dress. And I think where they're getting that is because on the prohibition nights, it is a strict dress, okay. Dress code. Like I have purchased, and I counted them, 31 dresses. From the 1920s. Like,
okay.
You know, flapper theme, just the long gowns. Like, because on Prohibition night, we are expecting that type of dress. Either come like as a flapper or just anything like that, mobster, just to kind of give it that feel. Or if you don't want to do that, just a nice suit or, you know, on those nights. And that's just once a month, you know.
God, so.
But it's not like I'm going to turn people away. Hey, I don't like your shoes. No, you know.
But no t-shirts.
I prefer no t-shirts. Like some kind of collared shirt. We're just trying to keep it a little, you know.
Okay.
But again, it's Lafayette. We are laid back here, you know, but it's mainly where it comes from is the nights of the, it's our prohibition night. Yeah. Is what we call it.
Because one thing that, and you're a business owner, so you mm-hmm. can approach it however you want. You can turn anybody away that you want,
mm-hmm.
I guess within reason.
Yeah.
But if somebody does come, let's say they come on with a polo, mm-hmm. like I have a golf polo, yeah. and I wear jeans almost every day.
I do too.
You have jeans on.
I'm always dressing up jeans.
So know? if I come,
I'm not gonna turn people away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
But
no.
On the prohibition night,
yes.
where it's deemed a strict dress code, I think people that know that it's gonna be that,
mm-hmm.
I think if they're going to your restaurant, knowing that it's a 1920s themed
yes.
restaurant, if they don't know that mm-hmm. and they're going, then they did not do any research
yeah.
at all. But
I mean, we prefer it. Again,
right.
I'm not going to turn.
They're going to feel so, they're going to, if they go underdressed, they're going to be like, what is
yeah,
happening?
Because even my staff goes into a different uniform on those nights.
Okay.
My staff right now, the uniforms, like, you know, for our girls on the floor, cocktail waitresses, or the tuxedo shorts, stockings, and a little bit of a pump, like it's like a 1920s little Mary Jane pump, with the vest, you know, pressed long sleeve shirt. Our bartenders have the same vest, form-fitting vest, you know, long sleeve white shirt, black, you know, black shoes, not canvas shoes, you know. But on the prohibition nights, my cocktail waitresses become cigar girls. You know, that was back then, you know, they would carry the strap around there.
Are you you're not going to be able to smoke
cigars,
in there,
cigars.
Though.
No, God. No. Which we will sell cigars okay. because we have the outside patio. Because that was my initial thing. With this, you know, with the spot on E. Broussard, you walk in, it's good. And the thing is, you want it, the business, the speakeasy is supposed to be hidden behind some other type of business. Now, I very well couldn't build a business in a business.
Right.
So my foyer area was going to look like a cigar shop. We've got an in-wall humidor. I've got, you know, that old cash register. You know, we would have display cases of these, you know, nice cigars, you know, where they can actually smoke outside on the, you know, at the outside
right.
tables and chairs. But now, you know, with this other location that we're looking at, I can actually hide the entrance to the bar like I really truly wanted to, like behind a sliding bookshelf or something, you know. So it's going to be really cool. So I'm really, really excited about it. So we just got to see which direction we're going in.
Yeah.
You know, because it was supposed to be hidden, you know.
So I've only watched movies about that time period. I think most people have watched movies mm-hmm. and not experienced anything like that. My experience of watching movies from that era, there's guys with like little fat cigars, mm-hmm. their top hats are kind of tilted to the side, and they're holding a Tommy gun.
Yeah.
Like.
Oh, and I have that. I have a Tommy gun replica to put okay. on display in the old violin case. I got this vintage violin case off eBay. It's amazing. Like, I just have so much stuff to put Goodness. In there.
Dude, this is exciting because, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, judging by the response that I just got on my post alone, it was big, and I was like, my honest opinion was, I don't think Lafayette's not gonna respond to this. Like, okay,
yeah,
but I need to write about it because I think it's interesting, mm-hmm. and there's somebody that may, mm-hmm. and then it's just blew up. I'm like, whoa,
yeah.
This is something that people are excited about, and mm-hmm. then. They had men and women both like, oh yeah, I get to bring out this suit, and mm-hmm. I get women were like, oh, we get to be flappers. I'm like, what the heck is a flapper?
Yeah.
Like, So I think I had to Google it, and you know.
Well, my youngest daughter works at another restaurant here, and she's like, Mom, you wouldn't believe the people that just sit at our bar and talk about this place, and she's like, you need to come hang out and like talk to them. I was like, okay, just let me know. She's like, I hear about it all over, and she's like, that's my mom. My mom's opening that.
That is so cool, man. So let me see if I have any other questions, because I know we're getting close to 30 minutes, and I try to keep it around 30. Okay. Let's see. You said you hope to open it around April, mm-hmm. if that works.
The sooner the better for us. We're really, my partner and I are just, like I said, we should have been open since, you know,
right.
December. You know, right. So we're just, you know.
Okay, so as far as the dress code goes, there's no other restaurant with a dress code per se, right?
Mm-mm, no. I don't think...
I've seen people in Ruth Chris with khaki shorts.
And I was going to say that. I mean, I was just... Because I always believed, oh, we're going to Ruth Chris. I've got to dress nice,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I go there and I'm like, what? I mean, people wear jeans to church now. Like, when I was growing up, you didn't wear jeans to church. You know, you're going to church, put on your Sunday best. But right. It's like, it's just become so laid back now. And when, of course, when I lived in Dallas, it's so different. You know, you don't have people wearing jeans. You don't have, you know, because even people comment, like, how I dress here. And they're like, you're always in heels. How can you wear those? Like, I've been wearing heels since I was 17. You know, just, I'm used to dressing up. I'm used to put your best foot forward, like, you know. And it just seems like that one day that I don't care and I go to the, you know, the grocery store in like sweatpants and mixed matching socks and no makeup. Hey, Connie. Oh, God.
Oh,
you know?
God. Yeah. My wife, she's like, you know what? I don't even care. I'm going to have two different socks today. I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, we're not really going to any places.
Yeah. Well, my stepdad used to make fun of me because he would say, I'm going to the grocery store. I'm going grocery shopping. You want to come? Yeah. And I'd go, like, put my makeup on. He's like, why did you put your makeup on? I'm like, you never know who you're going to meet. I've been saying that since I was a kid.
Right.
But
it's true, though.
And now my daughters are like that. Well, with the exception of my youngest daughter, you know. But
look, it never fails. If we go, I don't often go out looking down-dressed. I always wear jeans or shorts, you know, and I always try to find a shirt that I like. Mm-hmm. But I don't call it dressing up. I just call it, you know, looking presentable enough. And, you know, my wife, when there's times where she just wants to be in a comfortable outfit, she'll go and it never fails. She will see someone in the grocery store and...
God, she looks so bad.
We will avoid those people because... You know, we're just not in a meeting people at a position today. But anyway, moving on from the dress code, what could someone expect to pay? Like, let's say my wife and I want to go on a date night and we want to go to your place, mm-hmm. Wherever that place may be located, mm-hmm. and we don't want to spend an ungodly amount, but like, what could we expect to pay if we don't drink?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't drink, I mean, you know, even with the food, I mean, it's, we're pretty much closely, we're close to Ruth Chris, but maybe not quite, you know, exactly there, probably just a little less than that, you know.
So will you have steaks there?
We're probably gonna do, and only because, you know, with steaks, like with me, this is how I feel, you know. I mean, I can't have anybody cooking a steak. I mean, you have to have people who know how to cook steaks, right. You know. You know, with this other location too, it actually opens up my menu to a lot more. But I plan on keeping the menu pretty simple.
Okay.
And then we do specials, because when I first put my menu together, I was just, oh, I have to put this on it. This is so good. I have to put this. And then my partner's like, Connor, that's a lot. You know, he's like, why don't you save some of this for, like, to showcase it? I was like, okay, yeah, you know. So really trying to keep it simple, because, again, like with Brick and Spoon, it is a scratch kitchen, you know. And but the way I'm arranging all of that, just like we do there, as far as plating guides and prep guides, I put a lot into this that it makes it, like, I can just give it to you and you'd know how to cook my menu. You know, I mean, it literally tells you A to Z.
Okay.
But we will have some steak nights, you know. You know, so it's just going to depend. Like, it's mainly, because to me, steaks aren't really Italian.
No.
But, you know, I mean, I try to stick to that.
Like,
you know?
Ruffino's on the River, they have steaks.
Yes.
I've never had one, but they look amazing. Mm-hmm. I've had Ruth Chris a couple of times, and it's hard to beat a Ruth Chris steak.
Oh, yeah. It's very hard. And that's my thing. Like, I'm not in the steak business. Right. I'm not trying to compete, because it's like,
I mean, competing in the steak business, I mean, there's a couple of solid places that make a steak. Mm-hmm. And if you try to cook a steak and make a mistake.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, because that's my favorite place is Ruth Chris by far.
Right. You know? They're still open.
Yeah, and they have been.
And they're packed all the time.
But yeah, I remember when they were located across the street. This was probably back in 1990. You know, I went there. It was prom, you know, and my date took me there. And that was the first time ever in my entire life. And I'm just like, so I went home and told mom, I went to this fancy place.
Right.
You know, but it was right there in that little building, you know.
Okay, so it's definitely a date night type of place.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure there's some professionals that will probably pop in there often to have a drink or two before they go home and
my
whatnot.
Partner is a really good friends with some local celebrities, I should say, you know, out of New Orleans and stuff. So we're gonna have some visitors there too, you know, opening night. We do offer bottle service too at our pods, you know. When you reserve a pod.
What I'm excited about, and this, by the way, this is not sponsored. Yeah. I'm not trying to sell this lady's restaurants, but I'm just excited about it, and it's interesting.
I do plan on doing more concepts, too. They're all pretty much going to be, they're all going to be speakeasies, but they're going to be different concepts of speakeasies. Like, our next one, you know, we're probably going to look in Baton Rouge, but I'm wanting to do Capone's Warehouse. You know, I want it to look like an old industrial warehouse, but then when you walk in, it's like, wow. You know, this is like, don't touch the outside. Leave it.
Wow. That sounds cool too.
You know, like a little juke joint kind of thing, you know?
Well, you mentioned jazz, man. I've been wanting some type of jazz place here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, you know, Zydeco, we have Cajun music, we have all this other stuff, and there's some other unique, you know, musicians here, but, like, when I go to New Orleans, and, like, I know this is probably to New Orleans people, this is touristy jazz.
Yeah.
But I go to the hotel, and my wife and I like to stay at the Hyatt Regency, and it's, like, a big building, and it's a hollow in the center, and they play jazz music, like, it's in a jazz band with a jazz singer, and it echoes all the way through, and it just sounds so good. And you walk through Bourbon and for French Quarter and you hear all these.
It's a different type of jazz.
Yeah, it's still good jazz and it's street jazz.
Well, I've been going around to local places that actually have these jazz, you know, like two-man band type. And we have some very, very talented people here. You know, I've got at least probably three sets of people. They play beautifully and it's very low-key.
Yeah.
It's very, very soothing, just, you know, and I'm telling you, this other lady's voice that sings, I mean, she has a voice of an angel. You know, it really takes you back and you're like, man, there's some really good music back then. You know, I'm getting goosebumps even talking about it.
But like, I love a good saxophone.
I was going to say saxophone, and piano, you know.
Yeah, the piano, I mean, there's certain types of music in jazz that I like, but my go-to, like, sound, whenever I think about jazz, this is, It's the drums with the fiber sticks.
Yes.
And you're lightly tapping on it. And then you got a singer that's singing really low tones, and you got the saxophone, and just.
And that's what we're going for. It's not going to be loud and, you know, kind of like New Orleans. It's not going to be like New Orleans jazz. It's going to be like a contemporary, just real smooth, real mellow.
I guess some people would call it elevator music or shopping music, but. You know, there's jazz, that smooth jazz, like Kenny G, that's elevator music.
Yeah,
like,
yes.
He's definitely a good musician, Kenny G, but there's a different type of jazz when it comes to club jazz and street jazz. It's like, it's a little bit more energy. There's something different about it. I love it all, but I can go on for days about.
Now, like the Prohibition nights, now we will pick up the tempo some, but, you know, I mean, just kind of think like Great Gatsby, like that movie, you know, the parties, So it's going to be a little more upbeat, but not to where it's like, oh my God, you can't walk in here, you know, all these people, you know.
I think my questions have been all answered, at least for me. And if there's any comments, you know, I wish I could see them, but if there are any questions that are different, because I ask what makes Capone's different, I asked what can somebody pay, what are some of the fun things that you have planned. All of them pretty much answered. So I guess I'm going to end it with what are some of the recent developments or businesses in Lafayette that have excited you? Beyond your own concept.
Yeah, I was going to say. I don't know. I mean, I love anything new that opens up. I visit every concept, you know, because, of course, being in the restaurant industry, I'm always curious to know, like, I'm the kind of person who wants to see behind the scenes. Yeah. Like, how do you do this, you know? And if my kids go work somewhere, like my oldest daughter started at BJ's Brewhouse, I'm like, this is a lot of seating. Like, how many kitchens do you have?
Have you seen the menu over
yes.
there? Oh, my God.
And they thought my menu was a lot. I was like, what? And
I asked one of the servers at BJ's Brewhouse how many items they had in the menu. It was 180-something.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you keep
and I'm like, I just ordered the same thing because, like, I'm like,
I'm like, how do you keep it all fresh?
Yeah.
Like, you have to have, like, an extreme amount of throughput.
Well, and if you look at it, too, you know, like, with menu engineering, it's just, like, your product mix is basically pretty much the same across the board. You're just using it in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, to create different items, you know.
Well, like, you know, they have pasta, they have pizza, they have a variety of desserts, but it's just, there's
so
much.
Seared tuna, all this, yeah.
There's so much, and it feels like a lot, and you turn the several pages of the menu, and when I go to a restaurant that has one single leaflet of a menu, and I'm like,
that's it?
Oh, okay. I will take the only thing that I'll eat here. Like, that's it.
Exactly.
But BJ's Brewhouse is ridiculous.
Yeah,
and,
it's huge.
But there's a couple of places in downtown that have already opened.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things in downtown, too, that are coming. I can't expose it just yet. But it's going to be good stuff.
Yeah.
And especially if what you're wanting to happen happens in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Craziness.
Yep.
That's craziness.
And and that's what I told my partner. I'm like, I have so many concepts. I have, you know, and it's just, and he loves all, because I have this one little book, and it said, you know, she believed she could, she did, or something like that. And like all of my ideas in there, he's like, can I see the book? And he's like, oh my God. He's like, where have you been hiding this? He's like, this would be amazing here. This would be amazing here. I'm like, slow down one thing at a time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I mean, I've always been interested in different things. So anytime I go out of state, I have to visit those eclectic places, see what they're doing. I was like, God, this could work. Or if we did this, you know.
It's the weird places that attract you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chain restaurants, they're not weird, but the local places,
yeah.
They're weird.
Well, what I believe, and this is what I'm really trying to get through at Capone's, and, you know, it's one thing I've learned from, you know, being a consultant. Most people say what type of business you're in. I never say that I'm in the restaurant business.
Okay.
I never say that I'm in the bar business. I'm in the reaction business.
Okay.
Because the moment, if you ever watch me at Brick and Spoon, I'm usually that last person that sees the plate of food. And if I'm not, I'm on the floor and I'm watching them. And I teach my staff how to present the food. You know, don't hold the food here.
Right, right.
Hold it here so everybody else can see it. And my first thing is when they put the plate in front of you, I'm watching your face.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, if you just look down and you just keep having your, you know, I was like, ooh, what's wrong with that? You know,
yeah.
Because I expect like, oh my God, look at this. You're in the reaction business because that's what we're there for. You're there for an experience, you know, restaurant, you're there for a good eating experience.
Yeah.
You know, the bar, you're there for interactions, you know.
It's like when you go to a Mexican restaurant and it never fails when the fajita comes out.
Oh, yes.
And it's sizzling. Everybody's like, oh, wow. I should have got that.
And you know what it is. And yeah. You turn around.
And you go next time, and guess what? You don't get it.
You don't get the fajitas.
You're like, because I always get the same thing.
I get the same thing every time. Fajitas, you know. But, you know, that's, and, you know, right down to, and so much goes into a restaurant, like when it comes to the lighting, the sound of how bright the lights are.
Yeah.
How fast the music's playing. And my staff, they get, they're like, it's funny, why do you keep changing the music? I'm like, it's in the morning. You still want some kind of upbeat, but you don't want what you're going to play in the afternoon, you know. And it just depends on how fast your staff moves. Just like, say you got Brick and Spoon and you got Ruth Chris. Brick and Spoon is very well lit. You know, we've got some pretty happening music playing. You know, people we're rushing, we're doing this because people want to eat and go. It's breakfast, you know, and our prices reflect that.
Yeah.
You know, Ruth Chris, it's low lit, you know, especially at night, very dim. If you notice, the servers do not rush.
Oh, no.
No one's in a rush.
They talk slow and low.
They talk slow, and you've got different people that come to your table, and they're even, like, the projection of their voice is not what I'm doing right now. It's very just low. And, of course, their prices reflect that. Now,
right, right.
In the event, just say here's Ruth Chris at Brick and Spoon. They would complain. Even though the food would be great, they would complain about paying those prices because that's not the right atmosphere for that type, you know. So that's what another thing that goes into it. It's just the science behind restaurants and bars. I've put all of this thought into it. You know, it's this particular concept has been a little over 2 years in the making, you know. Not just to tie the history into it, but everything else to make sure, you know, right down to different levels of seating, high tops, low tops. It, you know, because we are a bar and a restaurant, so of course I'm creating experience with food in one, you know, profit center, and the next one, it's you're creating interactions.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Science in the restaurant.
The speed of the music, the brightness of the lights. It's just there's so much that goes into it. You know.
You know, I've been in a restaurant, and I know we're getting pretty oh, close yeah. to 45 minutes. So
I can talk all day.
I know, and I'm trying to be respectful of your time. But like there's times where we're in a restaurant and, you know, the lighting's all controlled by, you know, dimmers mm-hmm. and all that. Oh, wow.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. And we'll be sitting, and I guess we're in a transition time of like afternoon to evening mm-hmm. and the lights will get lower and everybody's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And like, they're just setting the mood. Yeah, that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Goodness. Well, Connie, I really appreciate you taking the time to meet with me and talk about Capone's. I tried to get as many of the questions that I had, and I know there's probably going to be more, but hopefully there's some comments that people are leaving,
okay.
and hopefully they're good. If, if not, then, you know,
hey, no.
do your thing. You know, address it, like, you know, inform the people yeah. that what it's going to be, and that's all we can hope for.
And I think I'm going to try to be a little more informative on the site, too, because not everyone knows about, you know, they don't know about the history of Prohibition. And I just figured everybody didn't. Like, didn't you learn about this in school? You know,
like, look, I'm not a history buff at all.
I
failed history in high school,
yeah.
and it was bad. But look, I know you got to run.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate you coming out. And if there's anybody watching that wants to potentially sponsor us, there's your information right there. You can call or email. Please support us. And then be sure, if you don't already follow us, go to Developing Lafayette on Facebook. We're on Instagram too, and we're on Twitter, but Twitter is not that great. So Connie, appreciate
Thank you.
You.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I can't wait for the restaurant to open. So with that, we'll see you guys later. We'll have a good weekend and enjoy your day.